Hello, I'm Mark DeLuzio. Over the past century, our constitutional republic, grounded in the rule of law, has been transformed into a tyrannical democracy, orchestrated by unelected bureaucrats and globalists. The Constitution is now treated as a suggestion, not the law of the land. Welcome to the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God.
Hi, I'm Mark's co-host, Suzette Lawrence. Our intention is to explore the Constitution and discuss how our freedoms and constitutional rights are violated by those very politicians who took an oath on the Bible to uphold it. Learn how the Constitution is the solution to our country's problems. What do we need to do to restore our inalienable and enumerated rights? Class begins now.
Good afternoon, Suzette Lawrence. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm going to be even better after I learn a little bit from Steve Zipperman, a good friend of mine, who is running for state senate in Arizona's legislative district number 1, which covers Prescott Valley, and 500 million other towns. Steve and I met, Suzette, like I met you on the campaign trail. And we became friends, and it seemed like every time I was in Yavapai giving a talk or whatever, Steve showed up, and he was there. And at first, I thought he was like shadowing me, like he was like a spy or something. But as we got to know each other, I said to my wife Diane, I said, "There's another candidate who can spell the Constitution. He knows the Constitution. It's like that's not a commodity." It's, you know, he talks the Constitution. He brings everything back to that. Then I found out, Steve, you and your wife Sharon, first of all, you're a lawyer, and you studied the Constitution for a full year in law school, and you and your wife Sharon actually teach the Constitution. You've been doing that for about 5 years.
Yes.
And your session is 12 classes, 2 hours each, so it's 24 hours worth of hands-on learning from Steve and Sharon on the Constitution. And it was a pleasure and a breath of fresh air to find a candidate that knows and understands and respects the Constitution. And that's how I really got attracted to you, because I said, geez, I got to know this guy, right? So as we kept bumping, I was running for Congress, you were running for a state seat, but we kept bumping into each other and we became friends. And now that Steve is running for state senate in LD1 in Arizona, I am endorsing him. We're going to talk about the race. Steve, we're going to talk about the issues and the major issues that really affect us here in Arizona. And there's so many. But I want to turn it over to you and kind of do a little bit of an intro and say hello to everybody out there and go from there.
Well, thank you, Mark. I appreciate it very much. Yes, our founding fathers were brilliant, brilliant men. And what we learned as we started teaching the Hillsdale College, we used the DVDs from Hillsdale College as the basis for the class, and we supplement it with a lot of additional materials. But Hillsdale has done a really, really fine job of putting together their video Constitution 101 course. The thing about the Founding Fathers is that first, they were all godly men. They all believed in God. Maybe not exactly the same God, but they all believed in God. And they all learned how to read by reading the Bible at their mother's knee. Mm-hmm. And then they graduated on to the classics and a lot of philosophy. And they were very, very smart men. And my understanding is that was the largest number of the most intelligent people ever assembled in the history of the world. And I don't really doubt it. Now, they didn't have radio and television and a lot of other things to interfere with their ability to process the information, but a tankard of ale and a kerosene lamp was about all they had. And they used to spend a lot of time debating these issues.
Oh, yeah.
And they came up with some pretty good things. I love the Constitution. I think it's the most wonderful document ever written, and I cherish it.
Steve, I heard a corollary to that story about the largest assembly of intelligent men in the world ever in the history of the world, except for when Thomas Jefferson was by himself.
Well, that's possible. Although he was no fool. They didn't all get along, but they
No.
all had a perspective. And because they didn't get along, each one of them would throw out an idea, and then the guy across the table from them would come back with a challenge. Well, that isn't exactly the way I see it. I think it should be this way. And they debated these issues for hours, probably months or years.
You know,
But
Suzette and I talk about this on this podcast. And again, to go back to your opening comments, you know, this podcast is called The Constitution Solution, One Podcast Under God. And based on what you just said about Christianity, I think, what was it, Suzette? 96%, I think, back then of the population were Christians. And
yes.
And you know, when you look at this, a lot of people think the founding fathers all sang kumbaya and held hands. No, they debated. You got the Hamiltons and the Adams against the Jeffersons and the Madisons, you know? And thank God Jefferson won, but now we're losing it.
Yeah, they fought very vigorously, and we are the beneficiaries of their fight. So
exactly.
I feel blessed to have been born in America and raised here, and probably in some of the best times this country's ever seen.
Sure. Sure. Well, Steve, being in Arizona, I want to talk about a couple of things. First, you know, your view on a couple of the major issues. And if you look at the polls in Arizona now, and I'm pretty close to the polls, Suzette and I talked about this. It's the border and immigration, which are two different things, as you know, and it's the economy. And those things right now are the burning platforms in America. I mean, there's other issues as well, but those two in particular are really what's hitting home with the voter.
There are a couple different ways to deal with those issues, but
sure.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess the first thing is, you know, you're going to be a state senator. And by the way, I'm not saying if you become one, you're going to be.
Thank you.
And we'll talk about your opponents in a few minutes.
No, we don't have to do that.
Okay. Well, let's just say that one doesn't understand and knows how to read the Constitution, and the other one wanted to eliminate the Electoral College. And I could see if you're a 20-year-old college kid who wants to do that, but when you're in your 40s, and then you say, well, I changed my mind, I evolved from that. How do you evolve from something so fundamental in our Constitution, so genius? One of the most genius things they did, including the checks and balances. How do you then in your 40s say that I evolved from that position? Oh my God. Anyway, that's your opponents. Okay. But we
it's
can lay them off the
table. Yeah.
It's mind boggling, quite frankly. But as far as the border goes, as a state legislator, well, as a senator, how are you going to think about that? How are you going to approach it? And what's going on today that, quite frankly, the way we see it, it's a sham. What's going on today?
Well, the federal government has primary responsibility for making sure that we're safe and also protecting us from foreigners coming in. That's
right.
We have the Immigration Naturalization Act and service. The INS used to take a bus up to a company that was full of illegal aliens and take them out, deport them back to where they came from. And these days, they welcome them and they give them a big check and transportation to anywhere in the United States. It's mind-boggling. I'm not happy with it. But there are a couple solutions that are available to the United States government, actually to the government of the state of Arizona. And one of them is Article 4, Section 4 of the United States Constitution. That provision says that if the United States is invaded, the federal government has a duty to repel the invaders. And I've, on several occasions, I've asked groups, okay, there's 100 people in the room. I want to see a show of hands. Who here believes that we're being invaded? Every hand goes up. And I have no doubt that the average human being, at least here in Yavapai County, knows that we're being invaded. There's no real debate about it. Although that's the weakest link in the argument. If you look at Article 4, Section 4, If we're being invaded, the federal government has a duty to repel those invaders. And they're not doing their job. They're violating their constitutional duty. So what did I do about that? Now, I'm just a regular citizen, just like you. And I don't have any special magical powers or any authority to do anything. I'm just a regular old guy. And so when I see this, I started thinking about it. And I said, just like running for office in general, I have to do something about this. So the first thing I did is I isolated Article 4, Section 4 as being a viable place that we could file a lawsuit, the state of Arizona versus the United States of America, for violation of Article 4, Section 4 of the United States Constitution. Pretty straightforward. There's no debate. It's very clearly written. It's very clear and easy to understand. So the second thing that I did is I found a lawyer. A really good constitutional lawyer. And he's down in Phoenix. And I talked with him at great length about this issue. And I did some research in connection with my conversations with him. The research said that we can indeed bring a lawsuit. And the question is, who has standing? Now, you guys are familiar with that. That's how all these lawsuits got thrown out of court. Well, who can go to court and bring a claim successfully? Well, if you read the Constitution, it says the state of Arizona is entitled to a defense, not Mark DeLuzio, not Steve Zipperman. We can't file suit because initially I said, I would like to bring that suit myself. And I'll be the lead plaintiff in the case. I believe in this enough to do that. And once I read a little further, I realized, no, I don't have standing. So who does? Well, the governor of the state of Arizona has standing to bring that lawsuit. Do you think that Katie Hobbs would bring a lawsuit against the United States of America for what Joe Biden has been doing wrong with our immigration policy?
I think we're going to work on making pigs fly first.
Yeah, I kind of doubt it. So she's not going to bring it. Who else could bring it on behalf of the state? And the answer is the legislature. Now, I've gone down and I've testified many times before a lot of the committees of the House and Senate in Phoenix because I'm interested. And when there's a bill and I read the bill and I look at it and I go, you know, this is a bad bill. They're trying to decriminalize all these things where people are going in prison and let them out early. I don't think that's a good thing for a law and order society. And so I went down and testified about it. And I've been down there several times before the election committees of the House and Senate. I know a lot of the people who are serving on those committees, and I've appeared before them. The way I got to know them is they would question me when I'm testifying before the committee, and we got to know each other pretty well. So I have their cell numbers. I have their, you know, I send them texts. They send me texts from time to time. And although I'm a regular citizen, I'm engaged. And so what did I find out? I went to the president of the Senate, Warren Peterson. He and I have a good relationship. And I said, Warren, I've got a lawyer who's ready to file this lawsuit on behalf of the state of Arizona. It's a clear violation of Article 4, Section 4. And I also lined up someone with a lot of money who was willing to pay all the legal fees associated with filing that lawsuit and doing the legal work all the way through to the end of the case. So I'd really like to encourage you to allow this lawyer to file the lawsuit, State of Arizona versus United States of America, on behalf of the legislature. Well, the first thing that happened is, why did I find that private lawyer? Because the attorney general is a Democrat and she won't do anything either to stop this problem. She's not going to file a lawsuit on behalf of Arizona, even though it's to the benefit of the people of Arizona. So that's why I found the lawyer and I found the guy with the money. So we presented that information to Warren Peterson, president of the Senate. And he said, well, we're working on something right now. I don't think the lawsuit's the best way to go about it. Give me some time, maybe later, but I don't think we're interested in pursuing that avenue. Okay, so I walked away. The next person that I went to is Jake Hoffman. He's the chair of the Arizona Freedom Caucus. They are the most conservative members of our legislature. And I had the same conversation with Jake Hoffman. Gee, I've got a lawyer willing to file the lawsuit. I've got someone willing to finance it so it won't cost the state or the taxpayer a dime. And all that I need is for you guys to get motivated to file this lawsuit. Let me know when you're interested. Well, we're working on something behind the scenes. Well, they didn't tell me exactly what they were working on, but shortly thereafter, the bill came out that dealt with the border. And they thought that that bill would go through and that Katie Hobbs would sign it. Of course, the veto queen vetoed the legislation. So once it was dead, I thought, well, let me go back and talk to Warren Peterson and Jake Hoffman again. And try to see, maybe, I think that's what they were talking about that they were working on. So they don't have enough votes to override a veto, but they still weren't interested. And I didn't know why until all of a sudden HCR, the continuing resolution, came out, I believe it's 2060, that dealt with the border. And they were hoping that that would get on the ballot and be the solution. Well, It did get approval. It is going to be on the ballot. So they haven't called me to take advantage of the avenue that I've got access to and I've created for them. I really want this problem to be solved. There are a couple solutions. One of them is this lawsuit. I think they can run, but they can't hide. And the judicial branch will indeed look at this. And I believe that they'll find it constitutional and a viable challenge. I think the lawsuit would be successful. Now, I practiced law for 28 years. I think I understand it pretty well. I think the lawsuit has legs. It's something that will be viable. There's another way that we can deal with this problem. In addition, you know, lawsuits, lawyers, okay, just because I'm a lawyer doesn't mean a lawsuit is the right answer. And I'm not even involved in it at this point. I'm just trying to match the players together so that they can get something done on behalf of the people. Another way that can be that this problem can be addressed is a border wall on Arizona territory inside of Trump's wall. We own property. They can condemn the property by eminent domain, maybe 50 feet from the border into the United States, into Arizona territory, and you can put up your own wall. Now, that's not going to be cheap. Who wants to pay for that in addition to the one that Trump built? Well, you ever hear of crowdfunding? You can crowdfund to raise the money to build that wall. And I have a feeling if you were serious about it, that wall would be built in no time at all.
Yeah.
Steve, so, can I ask a question real quick?
Sure.
Would we need a second wall? Is there some reason that we couldn't just complete the wall that the federal government was building?
Well, that's international territory where that wall is built, and the feds have that territory. It's their property. They have domain over that piece of real estate. The other thing is that a lot of it, the materials were not ever completed. They were left, they rusted, and I think Governor Abbott made a deal with the government to get a lot of those materials for some of the things he's doing in Texas. But realistically, if you don't want to be under the thumb of the federal government for immigration issues, you put in your own wall and you enforce it. Now, when I said that 2 years ago, I ran for the same exact position. And when I did, one of my opponents at that time said in an open debate, well, you can't do that. And I said, why can't we build the wall? Well, there's an Native American reservation. The Tohono O'odham have a reservation right on the border. You can't do that. And I immediately came back with, well, I would meet with the tribal chiefs and I would give them a choice. Either we build it on the border, like within 50 feet of the international border, right along inside of your reservation, or we build it on our side of your reservation.
Exactly.
And in that case, you and your Native American reservation are on the Mexican side of the border wall.
Mm-hmm.
It's your choice. Mm-hmm. Now, they probably wouldn't like that because My understanding is a lot of those tribal chiefs are profiting from drugs and human smuggling that goes through their reservations. I don't have firsthand knowledge, but I've heard a lot of stories that that is the case. So I don't really care whether we have the wall go directly down parallel to the border on the Arizona side, or whether we actually go around the entire nation. But it gives us control over who comes and who goes. I think Trump was on the right track. I think we should finish the wall that he started if we can. But if we can't, the state of Arizona has alternatives. It just has to have the will to do it. And so that will seems to be lacking. The governor doesn't want to do it. The attorney general doesn't want to do it. The people I talk to in the Senate don't want to do it, at least not yet. And so, you know, I'm a lone wolf in the wilderness, and I'm still trying to solve this problem.
One of the things that I've been talking about quite a bit lately, you know, for quite some time, and Susa and I talk about this on the podcast once in a while, people just don't understand what the heck their job is. Okay. They don't understand their job. Okay. And I don't know how you take a job and not understand the framework and the responsibilities that are being entrusted, especially once you put your hand on that Bible and you swear to God and take the oath and all that. That oath, the Arizona oath, is to uphold the Constitution. We talk about it in one of our nullification episodes. The legislatures have to take that oath to protect us, the citizens, for our constitutional rights, okay? And that's a big subject, I know. But it just infuriates me that these people don't know what their job is. And to me, what you're talking about is not your right as a legislature.
It's your duty.
Or a senator. It's your obligation.
Yes.
It's your obligation. Otherwise, you're going to break your oath. And you know, and so it just is mind-boggling to me that these guys want to get elected for whatever reason, and they don't understand. And it's so refreshing. This is why I was attracted to you, of anybody, that you understand this stuff. And you have some plans that, and you've got some options, which is phenomenal, which you don't hear from anybody. And you understand that this is your obligation to protect these citizens.
You know why, Mark? You and I see things very similarly. You are a unique person with respect to our government as well. Your views are very different. We're oddballs. I look at it that I answer to the people.
Right.
If you read the Declaration of Independence, the power of government, all power of government, comes from the people by mm-hmm. their consent. The consent mm-hmm. of the governed is what powers our government, period. So where our existing politicians, the people in office today, believe that they're somebody special and they're at the top and all the people are down below and they're going to tell us what to do and they're going to take care of us, in quotes.
Yeah.
But the way that I see it is that the people are at the top, and that I am down below serving the needs of the people. Now, today that's heresy, and it's a very unique perspective. I know you share that with me. It's a service job.
By the way, it's not only Steve Zipperman and Mark DeLuzio and Suzette Lawrence. It was the founding fathers.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay? They made it very clear, you know, what the role of government is. So, yes. You know, you don't even, it's just protecting us from tyranny.
So how do you explain, Suzette, how do you explain that all of the politicians that you interact with, and I know you guys interact with a lot of them, they all believe that they're better than the people. They all believe that they're supposed to make the decisions. I was at a debate against our current senator, Ken Bennett, and there were over 100 people in the room. And he had the audacity, there were some continuing resolutions that were killed by his vote. We're only one vote away. The majority of Republicans is one vote over the Democrats in the Senate. And he was able to kill several continuing resolutions. And when he was asked in front of that group why he killed those resolutions, he said, I don't think the people should make these decisions. This has to do with a constitutional amendment, and it shouldn't be on the ballot for the people to make the decision. I was elected to make those decisions. The Founding Fathers wanted me, the elected official, to make those decisions on behalf of the people. And I don't look at it that way at all. Instead, I really like the way Eli Crane is operating. I don't know if you're aware of this, but what he does is he does surveys of his constituents. And when Kevin McCarthy said, I need your vote in order to stay Speaker of the House, Eli Crane did a survey of his constituents. And Kevin McCarthy cornered him in the Capitol and said, I need your vote. And Eli said, I'm sorry, I can't vote for you because my constituents don't want me to. And that's the way I've learned a lot in the process of running for office. I love the way that he handled that. It's actually perfect because the people come first. We the people, it's not an accident that we the people are the first three words of our Constitution. That's intentional. And it is about we the people. And I want to serve the people of Yavapai County and Arizona. And it's a service thing. The $24,000 a year is not enough to get me to do anything.
It's not a very well-paid position.
Don't spend it all in one place, Steve, okay? With Biden, by that time you get in, it's going to be worth about 12. But anyway, with inflation, well, let's talk about the economy. That's the other big issue that's really on top of Arizonians' minds. We know that we have inflation. We know why we have it. The spending by the federal government is pushing the Federal Reserve to print money electronically, buy our debt, and then we have to pay it back with interest. And the only people who win are the people at the Federal Reserve, and they have no incentive
to spend less.
A stable economy. No yes. incentive for low inflation. Zero.
How about getting reelected? It's up to the people to make that decision. You know, the Founding Fathers believed that we were supposed to read the news, but they thought the news was like the Tombstone Epitaph, a small neighborhood newspaper. They couldn't see that the media was controlled by multinational, multi-billion-dollar corporations.
Right.
But we were supposed to read in the newspaper that politician's a bad guy. He did bad things. And you and I and all the rest of the people are supposed to vote the guy out of office. But it doesn't work that way. We as citizens have left a lot of very bad people in office. They keep getting elected over and over and over again because the people don't take the time to learn about what's that politician really about and what has he really done. For example, my opponent, Mr. Bennett, has voted with the Democrats many, many times. And he shouldn't be reelected as a Republican. As the chair of the Education Committee, he allowed 19 Democrat bills to be heard. And the chair of a committee has the prerogative to not hear any of the minority party's bills. So he could have killed all 19 of those. Instead, 19 bills were heard, 18 passed out of the Education Committee with his vote with the Democrats. And he denies it. Every time he gets in front of a public group, he says, that isn't true, that isn't true. It is true. And you can verify it if you go to azledge.gov, which is the legislature's website, you can verify how he voted in the Education Committee. And those bills, one of those bills allowed mandated tampon machines in the boys' bathroom in grades 6 through 12. I think it's outrageous and it's ridiculous. That was $2.5 million that he appropriated money for. By passing that bill, and nobody holds them accountable. And, you know, I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just, these are the facts. This is his voting record. And he's never held accountable for his actions. The other thing that you're focused, and you have been for quite a while, on the Federal Reserve, and I agree that they need to go, that there needs to be a lot more scrutiny with the way things are done. Conflicts of interest on the federal level are routine. You know, Pelosi buying stock, Feinstein buying stock right after she came out of a meeting and found out what was going on and where the law was going. Okay, well, I'm going to go out, buy a whole bunch of shares of stock and profit from it personally. That should never happen. But a bigger fear than the Federal Reserve, which is a huge fear, I'm not minimizing it at all, but how about the central bank digital currency? What they're trying to do is make the United States just like China. If you don't toe the line, and if you don't, let's say that you decide that you're going to drive more than your 15 miles from your home.
Social credit score. Yep.
Your 15 yep. minute city. If you go too far, not only are they going to tax you, but they may say, you know what, Mark, you can't get your money out of the bank to go on a trip to Europe or anywhere
That's
else
right.
you want to go. They're
That's
going to
right.
limit your ability to travel. They're going to limit your ability to buy things. They may just absolutely freeze your accounts and not let you have any money.
And consider this with the digital bank, the digital bank central currency. What the other thing they can do is they can see where all the money is being spent.
Oh yeah, you so bought a gun.
They can front run stocks.
Yes. Yes.
Because they're going to have that information. They're going to see where everybody's spending their money.
You
give
it's worse than that.
To the guy on the corner. You got to pay tax. He's got to pay taxes on that, you know,
when they
babysitter or anything. It's
when they decide to come after people who own weapons or buy ammunition, they know exactly who they are because there's no way around it. There's no cash. The nice thing about cash is it's untraceable. And I like cash.
Yeah, they expect like to increase their tax revenues with the central bank currency by about 35%. So they're very excited about that.
Well, a lot of people don't understand, Steve, is that now when you make let's say a credit card transaction, right? It goes to your bank, it goes to the retailer, it is a lot of transactions in the middle. Excuse me, I had a sneeze.
Bless you.
Not to
pull that one out. When this digital currency gets involved, there's only two parties. You, the retailer, and the Federal Reserve. So if you go into CVS and buy a stick of gum, they're going to know about it. That transaction goes to the Fed, and then it goes to your retailer. Okay, that's it right there. You're right. They will see everything you do, everything.
It's all about control, Mark.
It's all about control, exactly. And, we did an episode on globalism, and Klaus Schwab said, hey, China is the model we have to follow, which John Kerry and Al Gore and Tim Cook from Apple, all these guys agree, Bill Gates. Here's the thing, though. You know, this whole Federal Reserve issue and this whole digital currency is, you and I talked about how we mislabel bills to make them sound glamorous. People are duped on this one, Steve. They're saying, oh, it's going to be so easy now. I don't have to worry about it. What they don't realize is if the Federal Reserve just decides that you have to increase spending, or if you're going to lose your money by September 1st, they can wipe out your account, to your point. They can shut your car down if you drive too many miles. That's why they love electric vehicles, by the way. Okay. Well, they can shut your car down as you're driving down the I-17 here in Arizona and you went over your mileage for the month, your car stops.
I mentioned the three continuing resolutions that Ken Bennett killed. Continuing resolutions are really important now because we have a Democrat governor who vetoes almost all of the Republican legislation that gets through the House and Senate.
Right.
So a continuing resolution puts it on the ballot for the people to make the decision. And that's why they were able to pass through the House and Senate. There were three of them in particular. The fourth one is the border bill, which I'm very disappointed in because it doesn't do what it says it does. It doesn't
Right.
limit access to the United States through the border. It's a Band-Aid. But at least the people would have a choice to make those decisions. One of those bills that Mr. Bennett killed by his vote was they wanted to limit any government entity below the state level. So any county in Arizona, any town or city was prohibited from making you report your mileage to the government because that's coming. the 15-minute cities that the World Health Organization, World Economic Forum, I guess, is the one that's pushing that. The 15-minute cities, if you violate it, then you're going to self-report, and then they're going to be able to tax you excessively for violating the 15-minute distance. In Europe, they're doing that now. There are some zones in England, for example. You drive through that zone, now you have to pay an excessive tax. There are a lot of things on the horizon, but that bill was a good bill. It prohibited tracking of your mileage, and it was killed by one senator who says he's a Republican, says he's a conservative, but votes with the Democrats, and he killed the bill with the Democrats.
He's a walking disaster, and if people don't understand what's going on with him, I don't know what to tell you. You know, the other thing is the Federal Reserve has already executed their power with gun companies. I won't mention the company, but a client of mine was a very, very famous gun company, and I got called by the owner, and he said, "Mark, you got to help me, because after the El Paso shooting a few years ago, the Fed said to banks, if you had a line of credit with any gun company, we're cutting your prime rate. Okay, not cutting it, we're taking it away." And so all these banks pulled their money, and we went in and actually saved them. This particular gun company we saved and found all kinds of cash without laying people off through inventory reductions and things like that. But this is what these guys do, okay? And we already know that Obama weaponized the IRS, the Federal Reserve, and to your point, they're not even accountable. There's no transparency as their expenses. That's right. And a lot of people don't know that if the interest rate that the government has to pay back to them has to be returned if it's excess to their expenses. Well, they never have to return any money to the government because they just spend it like drunken sailors. And sure. Suzette, we said, what, 50 corporate jets? And what about that janitor?
Oh, and how many years ago was that? He was earning $168,000 a year as a janitor at the Federal Reserve, and that was in 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. I went to the Federal Reserve in Cleveland. I had a lady that used to work for me. She took me there because she worked there now. They had a gun range, Steve. You would not believe what they had there. And the people?
Vaults of art.
How many people do you need to print money?
Vault, art, sculpture, gold, silver.
Oh, my God.
They got it all.
Yeah.
They
sounds
have a curator
like,
at the Fed.
Sounds like the answer is to not run for the legislature, go get a job as a janitor. Make a lot more money if you're motivated by cash.
I see you
as a janitor, Steve. You're going to clean up this state, okay? So let's call you the janitor, okay?
I'm sorry,
Suzette.
I want to get to your point.
I love you and Sharon taught the Constitution, because I'm thinking, how do we get a resolution? How's this? Or a referendum, is that what it's called when you get something on the ballot? You have to have so how many people to have to sign a petition in the state
In Arizona, it's dependent on the number of people from all parties who voted for the governor in the last election. So it's a moving target. You have to look at it. It's a percentage of the number of people total who voted for the governor.
Because it would be interesting from a citizen action when you think of what can we do? How do we turn this around?
Well, there's a lot of things.
Referendum, a simple referendum on the ballot that says that everybody currently in office and anyone running has to take a test on the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, and their state constitution.
They'll never do it because they'd all fail.
Well, they would not institute it. We would run the test. I would run the test.
Well,
we would have citizens run the test. Very simple test.
There are a lot of things
that would be a very interesting little thing to do, because they're taking an oath on the Bible. And this is the thing about Woodrow Wilson that blew my mind when I looked into him.
The chief progressive.
He puts his hand on the Bible and claims to, and his father was a minister, so he understood the Bible. He puts his hand on the Bible and swears an oath on the Bible to uphold the Constitution. And before and after was very clear that he didn't like the Constitution because, yeah. Like, is it Mr. Bennett, who the elitist, who believes that we are too stupid to understand what's good for us? And he, the wise, well-versed, informed minder of us, is the better.
Elite. The elite.
You know, he's an elitist. He knows better. That is the most frightening thing when you have that level of hubris. And that is where we are.
It's horrible. You know, I want to get back to Mark's point about the economy. I think there's a lot that can be done. One of the biggest things that they do routinely in our system, our economy is kind of an illusion in a way. As long as we believe it's there, it's there. But if you look at the way that our government is funded, both federal and state, we have a real problem. I'll share a story that happened to me many years ago. I was in the Army. I was working at Walter Reed in a laboratory. And our manager, who was a civilian, came in with a stack, a real high stack of catalogs. And he slammed them on the counter and he said, "You two guys, you have until 4 o'clock today to spend $400,000. And I looked at him kind of not knowing what he was talking about. And I said, "Well, we've got everything we need. What do you want us to buy?" And he said, "It doesn't matter. Today's the last day of the fiscal year. If we don't spend it, we'll lose it from our budget next year. Because the way the federal government has always budgeted, as far as I know, throughout my lifetime, they've always budgeted taking last year's amount for an agency and going, well, there's 10% inflation, so we'll give them 10% more next year. And that's the way budgets have been created in the state of Arizona, and that's the way budgets have been created in the federal government. I have a proposal for you. How about if instead of doing that, they had what they call zero-based budgeting?"
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's too many agencies to do it all in the same year, so you stagger it about 3 years, 4 years. Every third year, your agency has to come before the legislature and justify every dime that it gets in its budget. And if they can't justify it, you get out the scissors and you eliminate those lines from the budget. Do you realize how much waste there is in the government spending?
No, it's huge. It's huge. It's huge.
You talk about the economy.
I was a chief financial officer of a manufacturing concern, and that's how we budgeted every year. We did zero-based budgeting. Just because you had $1 million in a certain account last year doesn't mean you get it again, okay? And that's how Americans budget. Do we do that? Do you look at your budget as a household and say, well, last year I spent this much on whatever, and so we're going to spend that much plus this year? No, you may not need it at all, okay?
Right.
And zero-based budgeting is one of the bills I would have put in if I got into Congress. That would have been a bill. I'm sure it would have been rejected by Kevin McCarthy or whoever, but I would have made us think about it. I would have been on the press talking about how our money's being mismanaged. And my wife, by the way, at the local level, she was a school teacher in Connecticut, high school, and I'll tell you, it was Rocky Hill, Connecticut. And she had $700 left in her supplies budget at the end of the year. The principal said, "You got to spend it." Same story as yours. And she said, "Well, we don't need it." Do you know how much $700 office supplies are? I mean, just physically, what that looks like. Post-it notes or whatever, pad, you know.
Right.
She had no place to put it, okay? But she had to go spend it because they did not practice zero-based budgeting.
They didn't care if she threw it away. They didn't care. The thing is that on paper, she spent it, and that's good enough. If we saved all that waste on the federal level, on the state level,
oh, it's huge.
Then we could provide for people in a lot of different ways. We could reduce taxes in a lot of different ways so that people's money would go farther. One of the things I believe that's wrong is the state of Arizona does not tax food, but local municipalities do.
Yeah.
Cities, counties, they impose a tax on food sales. You don't have mm-hmm. a choice if you're going to eat or not. You have to eat. Mm-hmm. So when you buy food, it should be exempt from any taxation.
That's and
I'd like to move a bill that does that, because it just doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. Cottonwood, Sedona doesn't have a food tax. Cottonwood does.
Yeah, it depends on where you decide to live.
Can I ask you a question? Okay, so Arizona this past year or so had a $5 billion budget surplus. Okay. And instead of, to me, a surplus is over taxation, and that money is our money.
That's right.
What happened was they built it into the budget, and I was at a Republican meeting, and I'm going to name names. I don't care. Teresa Martinez, who's a Republican, stood up there and said everybody got $20 million to spend.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I know all about that story. I'd love to talk about it.
Okay, and she said, "But I'm kind of a tough broad," she says, "and I know how to work the system. I got 50 for my people." And I raised my hand and I said, wait a minute, that's our money. It's not your money. Okay. That money yep. should have been returned to us. Okay.
Well, there's a lot more to this story, Mark.
Okay,
every senator in Arizona got $30 million to spend 30. In their district as they saw fit. And the idea behind that was that'll get you reelected. So you can build
right.
bridges, you can build parks,
right.
you can resurface roads, wherever the money needs to go, it's up to you to put it there. Okay. Every member of the House got $20 million.
Oh, okay.
And it wasn't $5 billion, it was $1.2 billion, is my understanding. They had a surplus, partly because of COVID money from the federal government. All of a sudden, they had a windfall that they weren't counting on.
But there
it
was
was a
more money before
deal.
that they built into the budget under Ducey, and he baked it into the budget. And then this other one, you're right, it wasn't total five. In total, it was five. But this last one was, what'd you say, 1.7?
1.2.
1.2? Yeah. And to me, I said, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
It goes farther than that. Okay, so how do you get a Republican budget through the legislature? How do you get it through? It's a very close call. With if you lose one senator along the way, you lost your budget. And now the Democrats have their version of the budget. Maybe it will go forward. So how do you get your budget through? Well, you offer everybody a line in the budget that says you get to spend $30 million in your district. And you get to spend $20 million in your district, you're going to be a hero. So vote for the budget.
What is this?
Doesn't
Santa?
Sound
what is
ethical,
this?
But it is what happened.
Is this Christmas grab bag? What is this?
Well,
that's our money.
The
it's
irony
larceny.
Is
it's
there's
larceny.
More. There's yeah. more. That money went out. They got their money. No problem. The budget passed. Ken Bennett got $30 million as a senator. Only 20% of that $30 million was spent in our district. The rest of it was spent in other places in Arizona. He gave $2.8 million to Adrian Fontes, the Secretary of State, who is a Democrat.
My God.
Out of his $30 million. The rest of it, there was one bridge that was fixed, and I think there was one school district that benefited. They needed transportation or something. That might have been legitimate, but 80% of the money didn't go to benefit anybody. And that $1.2 billion surplus they had last year, what's the deficit this year? Oh, yeah. $1.2 billion.
Yeah. Yeah.
So even if they didn't give it to the people, and I agree with you, they should have, but if they didn't give it to the people, my feeling is they should have used it, put it away, because tomorrow you're going to need it. This state goes, it's a rocky road. One year you got surplus, the next year you don't have enough. And if you don't put away a little bit for next time, right now they just had to cut the new budget for next year substantially because they're $1.2 billion shortfall. They didn't have the money.
That's just financial negligence and mismanagement.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, Steve, when I heard all this from this Teresa Martinez and heard the whole story, but not the story that you just told me, I was sick to my stomach. Now, after listening to you, I'm going to need hospitalization. Okay. I mean, this is absolute. And I just wish people would become informed. This is why we do this podcast. This is why you do your constitutional teachings with Sharon. We're trying to get people to get educated because we're obligated as citizens to know what the hell's going on.
It's why I got up off the couch and wanted to fight.
No,
looking at
I
these
respect
kinds
it.
of things, I can't sit back and watch them destroy my country and my state. I love Arizona. I'm going to die here. This is my home. I own property here. I'm not going to go anywhere. And I am a political refugee from California, but the last thing in the world I want to do is make this like California. I
Look,
watched the way that
I
they did it.
I escaped the communist state of Connecticut, too. So we're the JV team for your California, okay? We follow right behind you, you know?
Well,
but
ranked choice voting is how they did it in California.
Oh,
and November 5th, there's going to be an initiative on the ballot to approve ranked choice voting. Do not approve it. Do not sign a petition for it. Do not vote for it. Ranked choice voting is evil, and that's what brought California down. The end result in California was that every time that you had an election, the top two vote getters were both Democrats. So if you're going to vote for a choice for your governor, is it this Democrat or is it that Democrat? Because those were the top two vote getters, and it's an open primary. So it doesn't work very well.
Yeah, Suzette
it's
and
bad.
I are going to do an episode on ranked choice voting to educate how, you know, and tie it back again to the Constitution. I mean, everything that you do, Steve, which is what I admired about you, was you bring it right back to that document, which, by the way, is only roughly 4,500 pages. Okay, it's not a lot to read. Maybe every September 17th, we should sit down and read it. Okay?
4,500 words, not pages.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a lot longer than I thought it was.
Did I say pages? Oh, my God.
Yes,
4,500 words. Okay. Half of which is Article 1, by the way. And 4,500 words. It's not a big document. You know, it's not a big document. And, you know, it's pretty clearly written. And yeah, it is right here. Yeah.
I just bought this, and it's in the Federalist Papers.
By the way, my Federalist Papers, you mentioned Hillsdale. I contribute to Hillsdale.
So do we.
I give them, yeah, and I got a beautiful book from them on the Federalist Papers as a gift. So, but Steve, let me ask you. We should probably have you back on again as this thing progresses, but. You know, we talked about, there's so many things to talk about, right? So I want to leave it with maybe some final thoughts on your mind and Suzette as well. But, you know, people should know that your website is votezipperman.com. That's Zipperman, votezipperman.com. And I'm going to call you the janitor from now on because you want to clean this stuff up.
Well,
I am
going to clean things up if I get a chance. You
know,
it's really a pleasure being here. You guys are great. I'm going to encourage, you guys are both extremely intelligent. You present yourself very well. And I know you had a run for the U.S. Congress. I'm going to encourage both of you to think about running for the Arizona State Legislature, either in the Senate or the House. I can use some help. I need like-minded people there who are capable of jumping in and not afraid to say the unpopular in order to achieve the necessary. And you guys both qualify, and I'd love to have you guys there working with me. There are a lot of people who just don't have the guts. I know you guys do. I'd love to see you step up.
Steve,
2026,
you know that,
baby.
Yeah, well, you know, you and I already talked about this, and it's been on my mind about my future in politics. I just got back from a Curie Lake fundraiser in New York City this morning, believe it or not. And I've been helping a lady named Kim George run for Congress against David Schweikert, who I'd love to introduce you to, by the way. I know she's not in your district, but she's phenomenal. Okay, FBI agent, former undercover FBI, constitutional, I mean, right down the line. And I met her and I said, oh, my God, we got to have her in. Schweikert is, you know, voting for the debt ceiling increase, but he's standing up there decrying the debt, okay? You can't have it both ways, okay? So he's got to go, okay? And by the way, he's a Republican, okay? But I'm sorry, I'm an American, and I'm a constitutionalist first, okay? Republican somewhere down the list, right? And I understand the value of the party and all that. I got all that. But when they call you a extremist or right-wing zealot or whatever, and I'm sitting there saying, wait a minute, he is in concert 100% with this document called the Constitution. How the hell can you be right wing? You're right. You're a centrist. You are an originalist. You believe in. And by the way, I had this conversation, Suzette knows this, with a college student. She said, "This is an outdated document," and she said, "You know, it was written by a bunch of old white men." Well, right before that, we had the discussion about the 1,000 genders she thinks we have. Okay, I said, "How do you know they're white? How do you know they were men? They wore wigs." Okay, and
they were all gay. Oh, never mind.
Okay,
and here's the other thing: they weren't old; they were very young.
Yes, they were. They were in their early 20s, many of them.
They were very young.
I think Jefferson was 31 when he wrote the Constitution, the Declaration. But, you know, the thing is, though, you know, so I said to her, look, there's something you don't understand about this document. The Constitution is not a suggestion. It's the law.
Yep.
There's something you don't understand.
The supreme law of the land.
Yes. Yes. We talked about the Supremacy Clause, right? And so it's like mind-boggling how these kids are being hoodwinked.
They're being manipulated and brainwashed.
They're not being educated. They're being indoctrinated in school. Who the heck is talking about like gender transition to anyone? I mean, that's really between you and your doctor. That's not you and your teacher. Or, you know, I mean, that makes no sense. And meanwhile, the kids are in Baltimore City. I know there are 5 schools where not a single kid can read.
And that doesn't surprise me.
They had a $20 billion, Elijah Cummings had a $20 billion budget during his reign. He's passed away, not to speak ill of the dead. But he was, you know, the kids there, I mean, the city has just gone, it actually... When I was there in the 80s, there was a revival, and that has all gone to the wayside.
I remember the revival in downtown, in the whole federal area.
The Row House, Federal Hill, and the Inner Harbor,
you could buy a house for a dollar and fix it up. My friend did that. I lived in a Renaissance neighborhood. You know, so it's really interesting to watch losing propositions continue to win. You know, show me where this has worked.
Well, the communists put in the congressional record back in the 50s their steps for taking over. And one of the first steps that they had was taking over the schools and converting the minds of the students.
Mm-hmm.
That's it right there.
Let's not forget one thing, guys and gals. None of this is by accident.
None of this
is incompetence. Okay.
No, I know.
None of it is. Steve, we're going to end it there. We really appreciate you being on the show. We should have you back again because I think there's a million other things we need to talk about. And you're more than welcome anytime. Okay. So you let us know. Okay.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to be here. And like I said, you guys, both of you, give it some thought. We need good people. And anybody that watches this podcast, get up off the couch, put down your beer and your remote control, and get engaged. We need people, citizens, who really care to make a difference. And as conservatives, you can make a difference, but you got to get up off the couch to do it.
Yes, it's work. But by the way, I agree with everything you said except the beer part, okay? So, okay. Okay. Steve, thank you very much. Okay, so let's do it one more time. VoteZipperman.com. Give him a contribution. Give him, you know, go check him out first. I think you're going to like what you see. I like what I heard today. It wasn't a surprise because I knew Steve already. And Steve, we wish you the best of luck. And I'm going to see you at the end of the month at your home. I'm going to be running a fundraiser and a meet and greet at your home, a barbecue. You tell me the barbecue is going to be really good. It better be. Suzette's coming too, and we look forward to seeing you and Sharon again. And you're gonna win this thing, okay? I mean, these other two guys just don't got what it takes, and quite frankly, You can wear all the cowboy hats in the world, and you can tout all the buzzwords that you want to talk about. But at the end of the day, when it comes down to knowing your stuff, there's nobody else like Steve here in this district. So we got to get Steve elected. And then we got to radiate this throughout the rest of the legislature and hold them accountable. That's our job, is to hold them accountable.
Amen. Okay?
And the first way to do that is to get educated. So thank you for doing what you do on your constitutional classes. This is why Suzette and I are doing what we're doing. And I do agree that if we're all in the legislature, 1 + 1 + 1 will equal 100. So thank you, my friend.
Thank you very much, Mark. Thank you, Suzette.
Last word?
Appreciate it.
Okay.
Bye now.
Okay, you guys take care. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to The Constitution Solution, one podcast under God, where we hold that strict adherence to the Constitution is the solution to most of our country's problems.
You can find other episodes on our website at 1787solution.com, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most other platforms. We're your hosts, Mark DeLuzio and Suzette Lawrence. Until next time, may God bless you and may God bless America.